Welcome to the Basic Money Matters Show, where we will discuss tools and tips to help you manage your money. Are you ready to get your finances in order? Well, here's your host, Annette Sullivan, certified public accountant and owner of Temple Management Consulting, to show us how.
In this episode, we will offer general education planning tips that may not directly involve financial planning, money, but these tips may have a substantial financial impact to your wallet regardless. And so we offer these tips as you and your student begin to plan for college. So the first is, consider applying to upwards of 8 to 10 schools. And as you are applying for those, consider applying to several what we call reach colleges, several target colleges, and several safety colleges. So what do we mean by these terms? Reach. Reach colleges are those schools that are probably not within reach of your student. You may be some those schools that have lower admission rates, that based on the academics of your student, they have a lower chance of getting admitted to that school, but you apply to them anyway. So those would be schools that you consider maybe having less than a 30% chance of getting admitted to. Target schools are those that you really would like to go to, and you feel like you have anywhere from a 30 to 75% chance of getting admitted to. And safety schools are those that you pretty much guarantee you would get an offer letter to attend. You feel like you'd have a 75, 80% or better chance based on your students' academics of getting an offer. So those are some generalities. Reach schools, target schools, and safety schools should all be considered when your student is applying to college. Upwards of just a general 8 to 10 number. Certainly consider applying to at least one in-state public college or university for some obvious reasons. Some obvious reasons are that oftentimes it's easier to get accepted at an in-state school, lower costs in terms of travel and living expenses. Oftentimes, you can end up with a better financial aid package from in-state schools, and obviously, going to school in-state, tuition is far less expensive than going out of state. So certainly consider your in-state schools. But you do not forget applying to at least one out-of-state school, because there are opportunities out there, programs that we will discuss, that where maybe going to an out-of-state school may not be as far of a reach as you think in terms of finances. Apply to schools with low yield rates. So let's talk about admission rates and yield rates, two terms that you may have heard before. Admission rates refer to the percentage of students who are admitted into the school compared to the number of students who applied. So for example, if College A had 1,000 students or applicants to apply, and they accepted 600, okay, they offered admission to 600 of those applicants, then the admission rate is 60%, 600 divided by 1,000. So 60% of those who apply get admitted. That's the way to look at it. A yield rate, yield often refers to enrollment. It's the same thing, yield or enrollment, refers to the percentage of admitted students who actually chose to enroll at that college or university. So while a college may accept you or accept your student, you may or may not enroll at that school because you have more than one offer. And so enrollment is a different number. Of those who were admitted, how many actually enrolled at the school? So needless to say that a college that has a low admission rate, meaning not a lot of students, they have a lot of people who apply, but far fewer who are admitted, those are highly selective colleges, very highly selective colleges. And those admission rates could be as low as 5%, 10% maximum. Usually, a school with a low admission rate has a high enrollment or yield rate, because 9 times out of 10, students that are admitted to a highly selective college will go on to enroll at that college. So there's typically an inverse relationship or opposite relationship between the admission rate and the enrollment rate. If you have a low admission rate, the school will typically have a high enrollment rate. School's not going to be selective and then hardly anybody chooses to enroll. That just doesn't happen. If the school has a high admission rate, they pretty much accept most anybody, then more than likely they will have a low enrollment rate. So schools with the lower admission rates, obviously they are more selective, they tend to be more academically rigorous, and they don't have a shortage of students choosing to enroll, right? They're gonna offer and students are going to enroll. However, those schools with a lower yield or enrollment rate can be prime targets for financial aid award appeals, or they may have generous financial aid offers if an academically strong candidate is applying. So if you have an academically strong candidate student that's applying to a school with a lower enrollment rate or yield rate, you're in a better position potentially to get more aid and to get in the door and cost less, because these schools may be desperate to fill some seats for that year. Doesn't mean it's not a good school. It just means that the numbers will work on your behalf. So, for example, James Madison University in Virginia, from collegedata.com, James Madison University several years back generally had an admission rate of 72%, which is a fairly high admission rate, but their yield or enrollment rate was only 34%. Now that's like a gap of maybe 40 percentage points. But there, it still shows that there's an inverse relationship. Now look at the gap between the admission rate and the yield rate at Stanford University. Okay, according to collegedata.com, Stanford University's admission rate is somewhere around 5%. 5%. 5%. But their enrollment rate is 85%. So putting that in numbers, if 1,000 people applied to Stanford University, only 50, based on, this is a hypothetical example, only 50 out of 1,000, only 50 would be admitted. And of those 50, nearly 45 will actually enroll. So you see how powerful that is? Another tip, pay attention to the graduation rates at the schools that your students are applying to. If your student wants to apply to a school that has a low graduation rate, then you should further ask, find out from the admissions office as to why the graduation rates are as low as they are. So what's considered low? A graduation rate of less than 50% is a ballpark. Schools that compete, this is an opportunity. Consider applying to schools that compete with each other. What do I mean by that? Schools that are pretty much offer similar programs, that are at the same level, like, for example, like your Harvard and your Princeton and your Yale. Obviously, they are competitors. In order for your student to be in a position to receive the best possible financial aid package, your students should be applying to schools that compete with each other for the same students. In other words, you will find it more difficult to negotiate or appeal any type of award letter that you receive from, say, for example, an elite private university, if the only other award letter that you receive is from a school that doesn't compete. So for example, if your student receives an award letter from Harvard, but the other school is a state university that's not at that level, then you're not gonna have a lot of leverage at Harvard to negotiate that award letter. However, if your student receives an award letter from Harvard and Yale, your leverage has increased. You are in a better position to go back and either appeal or negotiate a better deal. Colleges and universities are more willing to what we call sweeten the pot for strong academic candidates that are thinking of enrolling at the competition. They don't want you to enroll at the competition. They want you to enroll at their school if your student is a strong academic student. So let's talk about early decision versus early action. If your student is in a position to qualify for financial aid and will be relying on a favorable financial aid package, applying early decision is not the best course of action, because early decision, if your student is accepted at a school where they have applied for early decision, then that student, your student, is bound to attend that one specific college. So your student will not be in a great position to negotiate or appeal the award letter, since they have essentially indicated that they will be attending regardless of the financial aid package offered. So what we're saying is that depending upon your reliance on financial aid will depend on whether it's the best course to apply early decision. Applying early action requires that your student apply before the regular admission deadline. But early action does not bind the student to one specific college upon acceptance. So applying early action may be a smarter option if available, but it does not mean the student will receive their financial aid award package any sooner just because they received their admission decision months sooner. So paying attention to deadlines is very important when determining whether it's better off applying for early decision, early action, or regular decision. If you choose, or your student chooses, to apply regular decision, make sure that you get all of your student's application submitted early on. While it is regular decision and it's not early action or early decision, you still need to try to get the paperwork in as early as possible, because many scholarships and grants are awarded on a first come, first served basis. Cannot emphasize that enough. Do not wait. If the application deadline is, I don't know, January the 15th, don't wait until January the 14th. That's already late. So as soon as the applications are being accepted after the early decisions and the early actions, when it's time for a regular decision, when that is and it's open for regular decisioning, try to be first in line. So this would require, as always, the big word for me for anything is planning. Planning, planning, and more planning. So other general tips is there are alumni and legacy scholarships that are available that you need to consider. Colleges and universities value their relationships with alumni, and many of them offer pretty good tuition discounts to students who wish to continue the family legacy at a parent's alma mater. So some colleges provide these scholarships only to incoming freshmen, while others will make them available during each year. Every year that the student is enrolled and remains eligible, they may have to maintain a certain GPA, other academic standards, but some colleges will have them for 1 year and others will offer these scholarships for the entire time. So consider that as you and your student approach planning to apply. Sibling discounts. Many schools have policies in place to provide deep discounts to families who have siblings that plan on enrolling at the same school at the same time. So not only can you reduce your EFC or your expected family contribution when more than one child is enrolled in college at the same time, but you can potentially leverage additional savings by asking about or inquiring about sibling scholarships and tuition discounts that may be available. Geographic diversity is often considered at schools as well. For example, out-of-state students, students from other regions or states. Schools are not only looking to build a racially and ethnically diverse student body, they're also interested in cultural and geographic diversity. To build a student body that more accurately represents the country and even the world. So a school may be comparing two almost identical candidates, you know, Susan and Jane, with the exception that Susan lives in Texas, while Jane lives in Oregon. Well, the school may give admission priority to Susan if they value geographic diversity in their admissions process. If the school is in Oregon and Susan is in Texas, they are identical candidates, they just may decide that they want students from other states or other geography. So for that reason alone, it could be that the student from the other geography will win in that situation. But it's important to note that not all schools value this type of diversity, and that many large state schools give an admissions preference to hometown applicants over out-of-state candidates. So it just depends. But there are sometimes this is considered by some schools. And finally, there are many states that have special programs in place that allow residents of that state to attend a qualifying out-of-state university without paying out-of-state tuition rates or with a substantial tuition discount. So as you know, typically, when you apply for an in-state school or accepted to an in-state, in-state tuition rates are generally far less than out-of-state tuition rates. So if a student applies to the University of Georgia and they live in Georgia, the tuition is going to be far less than that student coming from another state. That's the example. But there are special programs in place, region by region, that will allow out-of-state students to have a greater discount going to that in-state college, or perhaps match the in-state rate. Oftentimes, these programs are available for students who are interested in pursuing unique majors that may not be offered by a school in their home state. So, for example, in the New England region, the New England Region Student Program, New England Region Student Program, is a program that several states, I think 6 to 7 states, are a part of, that you can take a look at if you live in that region as to the details around that program. to see if that's a good fit or something that your student would qualify for and be interested in. For the Midwest region, there's a program called the Midwest Student Exchange. That's a similar program as well, where you could, your student could get a tuition break and or state reciprocity. For those students in the South, there are two. One called the Academic Common Market, and the other is a regional contract program for those in the South. And for the Western region, there are several. There's the Western Undergraduate Exchange. There is the Western Regional Graduate Program. And then finally, there's the Professional Student Exchange Program. Now, each of these programs are different, and you would have to look up each program individually to determine what states are involved and how it works. What do they offer? But there are opportunities depending upon your child's program interests, major interests. There are opportunities. So don't just think that, oh my gosh, my child doesn't have an opportunity to go out of state because it'll be so expensive. I'm only going to apply to in-state schools. You may find when you look up one of these programs based on your child's interest that this program, one of these programs, may be an opportunity for your student and your family to save money going out of state. So I hope this information has been helpful to you today. General education planning tips. As you and your family begin to plan ahead of time for your child's college education or for your college education for that matter, please keep in mind that planning is key. I cannot emphasize that enough. That for anything, when it comes to money, the more you research, the more you plan, the likely you will reach your goals. You can often save money by planning ahead of time. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Basic Money Matters, where we take the complicated financial parts of your life and business and make it easy for you to understand. I give a shout out to Hindsight Media Radio Network 103.5, where our episodes are also aired. On Hindsight Media Radio Network, there is always something good to listen to and always something good to talk about.
Thanks so much for joining us for the Basic Money Matters Show. Please visit our website at templemanagementconsulting.com. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Basic Money Matters. Thanks again for joining us.